Playbook.
All right, welcome. So, man, just great. We're going to have a great day today. You know, obviously, reminder that we're talking about things and topics for people who really want to grow their practice, not people who want it to stay the same. So just a reminder, right? We're like a community of people. It feels like I haven't done a podcast in a while, but have a fantastic guest. Many of you may know, or you'll find out today that we're heading toward our big event, and every one of the subscribers has an opportunity to come to that event, which will be June 13th, 14th, and 15th in Nashville. We have an incredible lineup. And actually today, one of the folks is joining me is actually going to be presenting, and he is a alumni presenter for us and actually a friend of mine going back quite a ways. We had kids in the same schools. So David Salyers, thank you so much for joining us. It's always great to see you.
Yeah, well, it's pure joy to be with you, Jay. And I know you're helping to improve these practices, which all of us need. Yeah. All of us need to improve it, and all of us would benefit from everybody we do business with.
So let me give them a little bit of an introduction. So you were one of the marketing execs at Chick-fil-A for 37 years. Mm-hmm. So something tells me that you learned a thing or two being there for 37 years, right? Isn't that crazy?
Well, it's kind of a funny story, Jay. I literally went to work for Chick-fil-A 4 hours after college graduation. I graduated on a Saturday morning, started at Chick-fil-A 4 hours later, got That's recruited awesome. By Truett Cathy out of college. And at that time, Chick-fil-A was nothing like the Chick-fil-A you know of today. The entire headquarters was in an air freight warehouse.
So it was before they built the headquarters.
Oh, it was before they built the headquarters. Absolutely. And my office was in a mobile home attached awesome. To that warehouse. So I started life in a mobile home attached to a warehouse and got to see it grow into the organization that it is today.
It's funny. We did a tour. I took a group of clients down there 6 months ago or so. And boy, did they loved it, right? We just did the tour they do. And to hear the story about him, and they have a bigger corporate office, but to talk about the story of when he made that corporate office and how high the interest rates were.
Oh,
And it kind of helped everyone thinking about that he was building this big building with 17% interest rates. Everyone was like, wow, I was feeling bad about interest rates until they heard that story. So,
it's funny at the dedication ceremony for that office building, he said, I hope I haven't built my corporate tombstone.
Oh, so great.
And he thought we would never need more than that one building. And now we've got like 16 buildings down there. But at the time, that one building seemed like that's all we would ever
need. Right. It is well worth anybody doing that tour for sure. So, okay. So a long career there. And so we'll get into that. And then listen, I know you've always been a guy, and you know, certainly Chick-fil-A is well known for, you know, kind of being a company with a bit of a heart, which is so awesome. And being able to allow you to, you know, be open about faith and these kind of things. And so 2018, you founded Spark a Revolution. And I understand you're now, and you guys came and talked in your book Remarkable, which was about customer service and doing things at a high level. And then now you're also owning a co-working space. Look at you. You're just like getting into all of it, right?
I've actually got 7 different businesses now.
Okay, good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you.
So I love business. I love, you know, for me, business is like sport. You know, I just love to play and
it's awesome.
Love to do it the right way.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, probably today, so I know I won't go into everything that you're going to, we don't want you to share everything you're going to talk about in Nashville. We had a great, I think you came to one of my first Culture Fest events that we ever did. We did a couple of those and just a great addition to that. And so can we talk a little bit about just this idea? You know, most of the folks listening to this are either starting practices, they may not be my clients yet, but this is sort of like my donation to the profession to share stuff with them and get them thinking differently. So can we talk a little bit about what, like when you think about what culture means, and a lot of people in business, it's sort of new, right? They're like, they want to talk about the teeth or the back or, you know, their profession, but the, but culture has always been kind of a obscure concept.
Yes.
So can we talk a little bit about how you defined culture and what that looked like
for sure. Well, the challenge with culture, it's very amorphous. You know, it's kind of like a brand. You know, I spent most of my career at Chick-fil-A, 37 years trying to build a brand. Right. And you had 100 different marketers, asked them for definition of a brand, you might get 100 different answers to
that.
Because it's this, you know, it's not a black and white kind of thing. Well, culture is the same way. In fact, in a lot of ways, I find that culture and brands are kind of Siamese twins in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, Jay, I've been out of Chick-fil-A now for 5 years, and I get called back all the time, but it's almost never about marketing. It's almost always about culture.
Not interesting.
And it makes me kind of scratch my head and say, why would they call the marketing guy back about culture, so to speak? But I've kind of come to kind of drawn a conclusion from that. And my conclusion is this, that great brands are a great story that customers want to be part of. And so building a brand is building a story that customers could see themselves wanting to be part of. Well, great cultures are the same thing. It's a story that employees want to be part of. And a great brand, I've never seen a great brand come out of a mediocre culture. So the starting point to build a great brand is to build a great culture. And then cultures are contagious. And they're contagious to the customers you serve. So if you've got employees who are excited about your business, that will be contagious to the customers that you serve. But they're both fundamentally about creating a great story that customers and your employees want to be part of.
I love it. And I think, you know, for a lot of the folks listening to this, they don't think of themselves as brands, by the way. So, you know, your typical doctor's office isn't championing brand much, right?
Yeah.
But really what you're saying is when they come in there, I mean, this could be the, you know, this is how you would elevate, right, to the quality. I'm assuming that Chick-fil-A, as an example, isn't winning customers on the cheapest price, right?
Correct. In fact, that to me is what a brand is all about. You know, you have to ask yourself the question, what's the opposite of a brand?
Yeah.
Like if it had a commodity. Spectrum, you got a strong brand on one end, what would be the opposite? And I would say it's a commodity.
Right.
And commodities by definition are bought based on price.
100%.
So the minute you start selling your product based on price, you've basically taught people to think of your product as a commodity. But brands insulate you from having to compete on price. You know,
and I think as a marketer, right, it's interesting. I notice my young marketers, every time they show me something, they start with a discount. I'm like, what is wrong with you?
Yes.
Why don't you talk about the value you're getting? Don't give the price. Why would I discount anything, right?
Right.
This doesn't make any sense to me.
I mean, the greatest marketing is all about insulating yourself from having to compete on price. To me, that's what a strong brand does for you.
So part of like what we'll do in Nashville, right, is you think about a business owner bringing a team of people with them. These are the kind of things they don't hear, right? We're kind of in the trenches and, you know, your patients are in front of you, but it's like getting them to understand, hey, their part, you know, you want to bring yourself and your team, and then we're going to be imparting really how that team, everything from, because a lot of what you did too, right, was how you guys treated people.
Yes.
Like you're not getting this without having your people philosophy had to match what your brand, right?
And so let's kind of tie that back to culture for a minute. Mm-hmm. There's so many dimensions to culture.
Yeah.
You started by asking about culture. Well, here's what's fascinating, Jay. For my first 10 years at Chick-fil-A, 40% of our operators were unprofitable in any given month. And they make their money off the profit.
Yeah.
For my first 10 years at Chick-fil-A, 100% of the people I hired at Chick-fil-A took a cut in pay to come.
Wow.
So part of this whole, you know, the brand.
So you weren't paying everyone the highest wages in the market.
No, absolutely not.
That was never part of what the strategy was.
Absolutely not. And to me, that's part of the definition of a strong culture.
Yeah.
A culture is everything you get of value beyond your paycheck from an organization is another way to think about culture. And what we had to do was offer the true riches in life, because the reality is, Jay, the real riches in life never show up in your bank account anyway. Yeah, they show up in the richness of relationships, the richness of experiences, the richness of the mission we're on, the richness of the community that we feel. All those were the real riches.
So true.
And for my first 10 years, that's what I had to learn to create for both our employees and our customers. And I had to be able to attract people willing to take a cut and pay to come. So a good, great question to ask yourself about your culture. What do I have that people would take a cut and pay to come? Would they take a cut? What do I have to offer beyond a paycheck that people would value? And if you don't have anything, that's a great place to start. What could I have that would make people, not that you want them to take a cut and pay to come necessarily. I mean, the whole goal was to get to profitability so they could get, at, you know, today at Chick-fil-A, they make more than the average. But it started with the fundamentals of understanding that the true riches in life are not in a bank account. And let's create the true riches for our employees, and then let's create those same riches for our customers.
Yeah. You know, I think it's great. You know, we talk about, and as a reminder to everybody, you know, when you talk about money, what you're always talking about is the value you create in accordance to the patient, if you're a patient or a customer, right? And it's not in accordance to what you think. And so, you know, a lot of people, when you start talking about growing their business, they you know, the cynical ones like to say, oh, it's all about the money. You know, it's not about the money. It's about doing what's right, to your point, which I love. And for you guys listening out there, this is the difference, right? There's two sets of doctors. There's, you know, if I've got a client in your town who's got a soaking up all the patients, the reason they're soaking up all the patients is because they have a culture.
Yes.
They've spent money on the culture.
Yes.
And that they've invested in training their team, and they're a patient first type operation, right? Which is to put yourself second, which, you know, is challenging. And so I love that. So let's.
Well, just to kind of emphasize that, to the degree that the only way you compete for employees is a paycheck, you've got a commodity culture.
Yes.
And to the degree that the only thing you can compete on is price, you've got a commodity product. And the whole point of a brand and a culture is to distance yourself from having to compete on the size of their paycheck and the size and the price that people pay.
So, and well, there may be some of you out there, you know, maybe clients are listening to this, but what I'm noticed is the people that have it start to resent doing things to keep it, and then they don't champion it enough, right? So we go to a lot of trouble to make it, and then they just sort of let it sit there. So talk about how, I mean, because a lot of this is repetition, right?
Yep.
And consistency, and it's kind of boring in ways if you think about it. But do you think people become, do you see companies that can maybe, remember, and you can't buy it, right? So we can't just buy culture, which people think, you know? And so once you get it, you got to remember, right? It's the art of keeping it too, right? Which is why people have to do things like bring their people to events and impart new wisdom in them and right, check it. How did you, how, I mean, in 37 years, right? It's not, that was, I'm assuming that was a big piece of what you guys had to do too, right?
Well, you're kind of all around one of the fundamental issues to me for any business.
Yeah.
And the fundamental problem we all face as business people is that customers want a value imbalance in their favor.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know, every customer I know wants to get a great value, and they want a value imbalance in their favor. And there's basically two ways to give it to them. Value equals what you get divided by what you pay. So in order to create that value imbalance as a business, you got two options. You can reduce what they pay, or you can increase what they get. And what Chick-fil-A always focused on was not reducing what they pay, because we charged a fair price.
Yeah.
We couldn't afford to reduce what they
pay.
We're charging a fair price every day. So we had to increase what they get. And what we would do is every year, we would try and create a value imbalance in favor of the customer more next year than this year. And the only way you can do that is to keep coming up with new things, because whatever you're currently doing created the value imbalance you currently have.
So true.
But what are you going to do in the future to create, and that works with both cultures and brand. In other words, we got to do that for our employees every year. How are we creating more value imbalance beyond their paycheck for that experience?
Yeah.
And with customers, what are we doing to create more value next year than we did this year? And that, and it's not by reducing price, it's increasing what they get. And the more you increase the value and balance, that allows you, at some point, you're going to have to increase your prices. Mm-hmm. You know, our rent goes up, our utilities go up, our, in our case, food costs mm-hmm. goes up. So at some point, you got to create a price increase, but you want that to be a non-issue mm-hmm. in the mind of your customer when that day comes, because you've created such a value imbalance along mm-hmm. the way. And it's funny, early in my career, before we really had that, Jay, mm-hmm. we would go up on price. We could almost predict how much customer count we're going to lose when we go up on price.
Wow.
It was statistically.
Yeah.
But now.
Like a trade.
Nowadays, because we kind of changed the game plan and we created so much, lose almost nobody.
We've taught that as being in a category of one.
Yes.
So for a doctor's office to sort of step above whatever the competitor would do so that the price comparison doesn't exist, which is doing things at a different level, which is how you treat them and all these kind of things. So can we talk about what you're seeing now? Obviously, in the length of your career and my career, we've seen a lot of things come and go, right? High interest rates, bad economies, tech people snapping up employees, driving up wages, now COVID, right? So you see all these things, and I'm curious as to, you know, one of the very disturbing things we keep hearing, and it certainly happened in COVID, and you saw it, you know, you could turn on the Today Show and they would say, oh, we've got a tip for you today. And they would say, you should go into your boss and ask for a raise. You know, they never bothered to say, oh, by the way, you might want to think about whether you're any good or not, right? I mean, I always thought about that. It's like, what are you people saying to these people? We kind of went through this whole phase, right, of like, you could just say you're good, right? So, I mean, when you look at the post-COVID environment, mm-hmm. which was, I think, going to go down in history as one of the biggest whacks at work ethic and the biggest sort of, you know, I have some very cynical clients right now, you know, I think a little bit of it is inaccurate, meaning that they're just fixating and that truthfully, all the things that we've always had to do, right? If you lose a bunch of good people, you got to retrain all the new ones, and it's going to take some time to get them. I'm curious how you feel. You have any thoughts about what's occurring today versus what was going on 10 years ago or 7 years ago? Do you think, do you notice this with?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, I mean,
100%. One of the little slogans that we would use is marry the mission, but date the methods.
Mm-hmm.
And what we got to do, we got to be married to the mission of what we're doing, but we got to date the methods because the methods have to change.
Mm-hmm.
The mission hasn't changed. Like, for instance, with employees, we want to provide them a culture that they value beyond their paycheck, but the methods have to change because times change. And so I think the question, and people get those confused.
If you're managing people,
you can't
be fighting this change.
No,
you've got to
lean into it.
I like that.
Now, the mission doesn't change again. And sometimes people confuse the two. They think the methods are the mission. And then when you start changing the methods, they think you're changing the mission.
We're getting married to the method.
Yeah, we're getting married to the method.
Acting like we're going to have to get a divorce to make this happen. Right. And you saw that a lot. People were divorcing their business. They were selling their business. They were quitting. That's a divorce, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, if you look at it, I'm shocked. Like, people, I've never seen anything like it, to be honest with you. So what do you think I've always been a proponent of what I would call universal principles, meaning the truth, which obviously you, right? I mean, I know that was for Truett Cathy. That was one of the things. And it was like, the truth is the truth is the truth. You know, we can wrap up all kinds of ways.
Yep.
And I still feel just as encouraged, but I feel like less people care about it's almost like it's becoming, we have a lot coming at people, right? The stimulus of social media, they're on their phones at just unbelievable rates, right? I don't think people, I mean, we're having a concentration problem sometimes, right?
Yep.
You think we have business owners, we've got to, like a lot of people who may be listening to this, for instance, we do a front stage, backstage model in an office, and I guarantee there's people listening, and like, their big problem is, you know, they're saying, I can't get my team to not answer the phone, but they're holding their phone on their hip and they're answering calls, and then they're wondering why their team would do it any differently, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Haven't we always had this in business, where as the leader, you have to go to a higher standard? And
for sure. And the leaders have to role model the behaviors that they want repeated. You know, that's another thing. Culture is more caught than taught. A lot of times we think, let's just teach culture. I think we've got a role model. They catch it by seeing it role modeled by the leaders. And that's got to factor into our hiring. It's got to factor into our training, et cetera, et cetera. That where culture starts is way before they ever start collecting a paycheck.
Yeah.
Culture starts in recruiting the right talent and then selecting the right talent and then developing the right talent. But it starts way back with the recruiting. And, you know, the greatest, it's funny, culture in some ways like a magnet. If you got a really strong culture, if you turn it one way, people are just attracted to it.
Yeah.
But if you turn it the other way, they're repelled by it. And you almost
which
have
is good.
A culture that,
which
exactly,
is good.
It's not, a culture's not right for everybody, but it's incredibly attractive to the right people. So if you're having an engagement problem, maybe you're using the wrong side of the mat, or you're bringing people in that weren't attracted to your business for the right reasons. And it may go back to selection.
Yeah.
It may go back to recruiting.
It's brutal for a person to have to realize that their culture is a mirrored reflection of themselves. You know, when you say that to them, it's always shocked. They're like, what?
Yeah.
I prefer to just say it's them and not me, right?
Well, here was an eye-opening moment for me, Jay. One of the things I loved about Chick-fil-A is we felt like if we wanted to become excellent, we needed to study excellence wherever we found it. And unfortunately, there wasn't a lot of excellence in our industry.
Right.
It typically wasn't other fast food places that we would study.
You didn't mimic McDonald's.
Exactly. So we used to go visit wherever we felt like companies were excellent. So I'll give you one example. We went out to visit a company called Zappos. Zappos, probably most people are familiar with Zappos nowadays. Well, this was before they got bought by Amazon and all that stuff. But one of the shocking things that we found when we spent the day with them, this, I just, my jaw dropped when I heard this. Maybe you know this. But they will offer to pay you $5,000 to leave after, I want to say it was three weeks or a month or something like that, right up front. And I thought, they're going to go bankrupt. They're just going to have all these people coming in and getting the $5,000 and leaving. And I said, how can you afford to do that? And they said, no. So the minute you do that, what it does is it bulletproofs your system. All of a sudden, everybody's a lot more intentional about who they bring in. They're a lot more intentional about that first 4 weeks on the job. And the goal was to get that $5,000 to be unattractive to people 4 weeks in to their experience where they wouldn't take it. And they said, yeah, we paid out a few but it didn't last long because it forced us to correct all the things that were wrong about our system. It forced us to correct what we were looking for in the first place. It forced us to have better onboarding. And our goal was that $5,000. But here's the flip side, Jay. They said, we'd rather pay $5,000 4 weeks in than 6 months later after we spent all this time training. We would have spent a lot more than that over 6 months only to have to turn them over again. And so they said, we'd rather pay that money up front, let it bulletproof our hiring and onboarding system.
I love it.
Isn't that great? It's so counterintuitive, isn't it? It's like, I feel like we would go bankrupt if we did that.
Well, they don't.
But it actually saves you.
They don't want to count that, you know, 6 months of unengaged employment, what that really cost you. That's a That's actually a really good.
And they said if they're willing to leave after 4 weeks, we'd rather them leave because they obviously don't see anything in our organization and culture that's worthwhile.
Wow.
Isn't that an interesting idea? It's so counterintuitive.
I love that. I mean, and it sort of holds yourself accountable, right? For of course, everyone listening to this is like, they're probably freaking out, like $5,000. Maybe you guys should start with a smaller number, you know? But I think
but now
I think,
they have a waiting list of people to get in because they create such a great culture that people want to be part of.
And, you know, I think for people listening, you know, I can't tell you how long I have the warm body philosophy, right? Or this, you know, we did an event 2 years ago on recruiting and retention. And, you know, it starts with if you're going to walk around and say, I can't find anybody, well, you're not going to be able to find anybody. And this is kind of the level we're dealing with, right? Where it's like, you know, I can't find anybody. Well, I've done nothing to try. I've convinced myself. So again, these are the kind of things where you guys want to decode these. And you just can't be saying things like that. And when you commit to culture, you're really creating your own enthusiasm about employing people, right? You're saying, right? And that what it comes down to is like, you know, a person who believes in culture is always going to be a better recruiter for
100%.
Sure. And I love the magnetic part. I always think about magnetizing, but I love the equally repelling the people that don't.
Well, here's another thing. I get asked all the time, as you might imagine, when I'm out, where do you find those amazing people at Chick-fil-A? Mm-hmm. And you know what I tell them? I said, that's the wrong question.
Right.
It's not where you find them. They don't magically exist out there. The right question would be, how do we become the organization that the people we're looking for are looking for?
Yes.
And that's in our control. Is to become the, we can't control these magical people out there that, you know, are hidden. But what we can control is creating the organization that attracts the people that we're looking for.
So we've had a lot of private equity come into the dental space. And I always tell people, I was like, and they offer them $2 more and they lose a good employee. I have a hard time, you know, getting people to market their culture, right? That's what they've got to do, right?
Yes.
They've got to say, we're going to spend more to train you. We're going to develop you. And this is, it's just something counterintuitive about it.
Yes.
And so I'm so glad you said that, right? Because I keep saying to them, you should have a video talking about all the cool things you do. And the bar for a lot of you, what you're competing with is super low.
Yes.
You know, and so if you can just raise it a little above the bar, champion that, I think that's tremendous. And, you know, and I think there's just something, I don't know why it is that they want to enter the game of price competition. Mm. You know, we actually had a survey of a lot of our clients who had long-term doctors who were associate doctors, and resoundingly when asked, you know, why do you work here? It was culture. It was all, and they were saying it not always as the word culture, but they were describing. And what you guys got to remember about your competitive advantage is that, you know, I think all of us, if you've been to a Chick-fil-A, there's Chick-fil-A, and then there's all the other places you can go to a drive-thru. And that's the way I look at it, right? Mm. And meaning it just drops down. You know, you go to McDonald's, you go to Burger King, you go to Wendy's. Yeah, usually some weird things happen at those windows, right? And people will go sit in a 13-car line over an open window all day long, which is really fascinating to watch, right? When you see it on two street corners, right? And so I think for everybody, you know, listening to this, you know, you sort of size up the competition and then you hit the mark higher. And I think a lot of you, you know, you get so just, you're so fixated on the problems, you're not looking at this idea of finding a match. Can we talk about the heart in that for a second? Because I think at the end of the day, right? And you know, we were talking about mission, and obviously you got to have a little margin to have some mission sometimes, right? So how mission oriented was everything at Chick-fil-A? I mean,
Well, it's 100% mission oriented, but we always used to say there without margin there is no mission.
Okay,
so you got to have the margin to fund the mission, but the mission was the driving force.
Okay.
And maybe this would be helpful. But I think there's a central organizing idea at Chick-fil-A that's different than most businesses.
Yeah.
I like to think a lot of people start a business as what I would call a get rich scheme.
That's interesting.
They start a business because they want to get rich. Quite frankly, as a 21-year-old, that's what I thought business was all about.
Me too.
I often tell people at age 21, here was my plan. I was going to graduate from college, make as much money as I could, as fast as I could, to retire as early as I could. And I'd set a goal of 35. And I said, if I can just retire by age 35, how could life get any better than that? That's the best I had as a 21-year-old.
That's awesome. But, awesomely incorrect, right?
Exactly. I mean, but that's the best I had. Mm-hmm. And I talk to people all the time now that's the best they have too.
Yep. I agree.
And fortunately for me, I stumbled into this guy named Truett Cathy and Chick-fil-A that introduced me to something 1,000 times better than early retirement. Something that I never passed my mind, or would have passed my mind probably, had I not run into him.
Yeah.
And that is, instead of finding the job I could retire from early, I found the job I wouldn't want to retire from. See, the thought that you could have a job you wouldn't want to retire from was foreign to me. You know, and I wouldn't have believed it, quite frankly, Jay, had I not seen it play out in Truett Cathy's life. I had not seen it play out in my own life. And so
interesting.
If you understand that, then it changes the fundamental organizing idea around business. Instead of business as a get rich scheme, which was me as a 21-year-old,
sure.
How can I get rich as fast as I can to retire as early as I can? Mm-hmm. That was my mission,
interesting,
so to speak. But now I think of business, thanks to Truett and the Chick-fil-A organization, business as a be rich scheme instead of a get rich scheme. That sounds almost identical, doesn't it? Getting rich, being rich, isn't it the same? But they're polar opposites.
Yeah.
A business as a be rich scheme is, how do I use my business to be rich toward my employees?
Mm-hmm.
How do I use my business to be rich toward my customers? Mm. How do I use my business to be rich toward my suppliers? How do I use my business to be rich toward my community?
Mm-hmm.
And if you see business as a be rich scheme, it changes everything.
Mm. I love
and
that.
A be rich business will run rings around a get rich business.
Yeah.
The only way get rich businesses can stay alive is when they're competing with other get rich businesses. But the minute a be rich business shows up, you know, at Chick-fil-A now, last year, the average fast food company did somewhere between 800,000 and a million in annual revenue would be a typical fast food. You know what Chick-fil-A did last year?
Probably a lot more. I mean, they've, you got some monster drive-thrus, man.
Almost $9 million on average.
Crazy.
Closing in on ten times.
Yeah, that's I could so see.
But
that.
It's because they're in the be rich business.
Yeah.
And but it pays off. You know, it's kind of like when you're not focused on being rich, it's amazing how you get rich.
Yeah.
But it's because you're not focused on that.
Well, we see that a lot, right? Client comes in, spent 15 years trying to get, you know, they get to $1 million, and then in 5 years I got that guy to $7 million, right? And it's like, and then in 20 years, so same thing. It's just that they're adopting a different philosophy in life. So work, your personal life, you know, I know you and I have, you know, similar belief systems. And do we think that in the sort of the secular world, if you would, or what's on being put on social media or whatever people are seeing, that, you know, I just noticed this. Number one, I'm, and biblically, retirement isn't really written about, right? In the Bible, certainly. It's, we're designed to work and to create value in our whole lives, right? So even if you did retire, theoretically, you should retire and do something besides just go play golf, right?
Yes.
And so thinking about this, I mean, do you know, when you think about purpose-filled people, right? The kind of people who want to go to work and have a mission, right?
Yes.
When we get done recording this, I'm heading down to the DR, the Dominican Republic, and we're doing a family mission trip, right? And we've built a clinic in conjunction with some of our clients, and we've got a mobile unit down there, and I built a training center and a hospital, and I haven't been down there in like 3 years, and so I want to go down and see what we're doing. And we send a lot of clients down there, so we'll go, you know, serve. So one of the things I invite all of you to think about is, you know, if you want to go on a mission trip, let us know. We'll send you to where we have places, and you can do your profession and serve, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really funny. Mm-hmm. We get them to go because they're comfortable fixing teeth. So on a mission trip, they're more comfortable fixing teeth than they are just going to play with children. You know, it's kind of funny.
Right.
And I get a little of that. So do you think that, do you think that people are becoming more, like when you look at this next generation of workers, do you... I hear mixed things, right? I hear they're obsessed with anything and everything but work, all material things. And then sometimes I hear that, you know, they're drinking less. I don't know, maybe they're doing drugs more. You know, like the data is very interesting, right?
Yeah.
But there are, and then you hear them talk about purpose. But do you think that's, I mean, what do you think the state of a college graduate today? I mean, I'm assuming that schools, unless they send them to certain types of schools, that less and less we're able to talk about the truth with people, right?
Yeah.
About, so what do you,
well,
you,
it's interesting,
do you have any thoughts on that?
To your point, there was a massive study done recently by a giant consulting firm, and they interviewed, I want to say, 300,000 people of the next generation. And basically, what they were trying to determine is, what's the difference between the current generation and the previous generation? I'll call it my generation.
It's always a question,
And they had, you know, hundreds of thousands of pages of data and research, but they were able to kind of summarize it down to this. They said, my generation signed up for profit and product. We wanted a product that we were proud of and profit. This current generation, the equivalent to that, is purpose and growth. Mm-hmm. So when I signed up, I was like, give me a great product, give me a profitable company. That's what I'm looking for. What they're looking for is these two things. Purpose and growth. Now, here's what's interesting. Growth is two-dimensional. Mm-hmm. They want to be part of a growing organization, an organization they see is growing, but they also want to experience personal growth part of that experience. So to be compelling to the current generation, you need to focus on purpose, and they need to connect purpose back to the daily business. If they just see business as a paycheck to pay the rent, that's not purposeful to them.
That's
so
good
news. I think
news.
What we've got to do is connect whatever their purpose is to their daily activity and let them see that they've joined a growing organization, because that way the purpose, if the organization is growing, the purpose is growing too, and the purpose is having more impact, and they feel like I'm personally developing as part of this experience. So for instance, in some of my current companies, we have a real emphasis on, we talk about purpose all the time, but we also create the opportunity for personal growth as part of their experience. And then we constantly show them how we're growing as an organization, growing in impact, growing in revenue, you know, growing in people's admiration of the company, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think if you focus on those things, your odds will get much greater of being able to engage the current generation.
Well, which ties in, you know, for our listeners, you know, in a typical doctor's office, you know, and this is what you guys should all be thinking about, right? And it's why I'm inviting you to come to Nashville. Taking your team to an experience is where growth occurs.
Yes.
It's not another day
and
in the office.
And they feel invested in.
Yes. Oh, can't say enough how that process of investing in team members, we see certainly just, it's a huge impact. It's a huge statement, right? And it's got a little bit, it's like, it's got generosity, it's got purpose, it's got a lot wrapped up in it. So for most people, when we start introducing you to generosity, what we're really saying is be generous in developing your people, right? And it's a little self-serving, but I'll tell you what, it pays dividends. And you know, I've had to sort of start getting people to realize that training your people, It's a beginning step of generosity. Yes, we don't all jump to, I'm going to give these people, you know, real money, right? I mean, people tend to start generosity in baby steps, right? And I'm not going to encourage you all to go write a check to a charity for $100,000, but making a commitment to spend $100,000 over the next few years of developing your team would be a wonderful, you know, and it will essentially self-liquidate and pay for itself. So that's good news. I'm glad to hear you say that, because I think maybe some of my clients are just getting cynical and getting old and crotchety. So
Well, you know, and you could ask, what's my plan within my business to constantly connect people back to the purpose? And what's my plan within the business to develop people?
Yeah.
And do they feel invested in? Do they feel like they're growing as part of their? And if not, what could I do to engender that?
And let me ask you this, because and we see this a lot, and that is that if you think about when we take on a client, and let's call them Gen 1, and we develop the people in there, and then they become like, you know, then they bring in the next group of people. I've just noticed sometimes how these people have such a hard time.
Yes.
That, you know, you can do it to me, but that doesn't mean you taught me how to do it to someone else, right?
Yes.
I think that's a huge thing we're battling right now. That's why we're encouraging our people to bring their leaders, and we're trying to really get those leaders to understand, you know, sometimes they can't even separate what happened to them versus how they're treating those other people. Do you see that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Maybe another little insight, because you talked a little bit about spiritual things.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Do you know where the word work first shows up in the Bible?
No.
In Genesis, before the fall, where God had everything exactly the way he wanted it, work was part of that equation.
Interesting.
So what that tells me, to your point, is I feel like God put us on the face of this earth to experience work with a purpose.
Yes.
And that work in and of itself can be an enriching, rewarding, exciting,
yes,
engaging yes part of our existence. But right now, the current generation is being taught work is a dirty four-letter word to be avoided at all costs and to be retired from. Mm. And if you think that's what work is, of course you don't want to go to work. But if you think, no, work is part of the purpose and part of the reason I'm here, and work should be a rewarding, exciting. You know, for me, it was always, thank God it's Monday. Yeah. For a lot of people, it's thank God it's Friday.
Don't you think that the money business also has propagated that?
Oh, meaning, yeah.
The money management business, the retirement business, the certainly people trying to buy your business. I mean, everybody is, you know, like we I think that's a, I think that, you know, you guys have to remember self-interest, right? People aren't, they're not looking out for your best interest. They're just looking out for their checkbook. So now this is something that cares about you. Mm. That's great. So tell me, can we talk a little bit about one of the things that we're going to do in Nashville is we're going to be introducing having some few people come in and talk about servant leadership and what that really means. And I'm assuming that there was probably a history of servant leadership, a deep history of servant leadership. I mean, do you remember the first time you started hearing about that? And are you a proponent of that?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Do you find that, like, tell me about what that's meant to you, that concept.
Yeah. Well, I think we all want, you know, they say that people very rarely leave businesses, but they often leave leaders. Mm-hmm. You know, and the main emotional connection someone has to a business is a leader. Mm. And we've asked ourselves, what do we want in the leader above us? Mm. We want somebody who cares about us. We want somebody who's going to develop us. You know, all these things. We want somebody who has our best interest in mind, not their best interest in mind. And so how do we become a leader worth following? Mm. And I feel like that's what Truett role modeled for us. He didn't necessarily use the word servant leader, but he was one. And he role modeled that wherever he went. Like culture is more caught than taught, leadership is more caught than taught. We look for good examples, we look for bad examples, and we say, I don't want to be like this, I do want to be like that.
So when you stick an office manager in between, you know, if I'm a doctor, I stick an office manager, and then I got 5, 6, 10, 20 people. You know, a lot of times we want to dream that office manager can do that for us, right? Mm-hmm. That somehow they're going to be the magic sauce. Mm-hmm. And that really doesn't work, does it? Mm. In other words, it's one of the things I've noticed, like when I try to bring in leaders and I try to say, do this, you got to be really careful about that, don't we? About backing yourself out of that thing that's the magic, right?
Yeah.
How did he stay plugged in over all those years?
Well, I think he was really good at one dimension of this, and that was identifying other leaders. Mm. Because what we tend to do is someone's really good at whatever it is vocationally they're doing, and they get so good at it, we promote them to leader. But what a leader does is very different than a master of, you know, something else.
Sure.
And so
high producers tend to sometimes be problems, right?
Yeah,
and sometimes
exactly.
You can have a high producer, they create collateral damage.
And maybe they're more interested in themselves producing than other people. And so people used to come to me all the time wanting to be promoted to a leadership role.
Yeah.
And almost everybody I know wants that. Mm. But if you really dig a little deeper, like one level deeper, it's not really the role they want. It's the prestige, it's the money, it's all these benefits of being
so
a leader, not the role. And so usually what I would do, Jay, when somebody would say, hey, I really want to manage 10 people, I said, okay, well, tell me who's following you now. Because the reality is leaders have to lead, and they're leading whether they're in a leadership role or not. People are looking up to them, want to be around. So if they're not leading anybody now, there's no way I'm putting them in a leadership role.
That's interesting.
And so what I would do if they really want to be a leader is we would start wherever they are and say, well, why don't you start mentoring some other people? And let's see how well you do. Or so, the worst time to become a leader.
When everybody runs, you know you have a problem.
Well, the worst time to become a leader is when you have people reporting to you.
Yes.
The best time to become a leader is when you're not one and you develop the influence with other people where they want you to become the leader.
Yeah.
And my number one criteria for leaders was, will people love working for this person? Mm-hmm. And if I'm not convinced they're going to love working for this person, they are not becoming a leader in my organization.
Interesting. Yeah, I love that.
Because they do want to get promoted. They want all the, but a lot of times the nature of the work, they don't really like.
Mm-hmm. Well, and leaders have to give some of the glory, right? You have to.
That's the business
they're in. You have to not be in the business
is to give the glory
of
taking to others,
all
not,
the,
not take it themselves.
Yeah, yeah. That's crazy. So, okay. So let's, you know, thank you so much. This is great. I always just love, I'm super excited to have you come talk at the event. I know the last time Teams has got an enormous amount. And obviously, you know, we're trying to hone in on this sort of particular group of people, which is these people trying to, you know, impact through the team to the patient, right? And that whole experience of creating something that is creating value and at a higher level, right? Which is so much about the experience, right?
100%.
So I'm assuming when you looked at like the Chick-fil-A experience, and obviously it's the words, it's the facial expressions, it's the attitudes, it's the cleanliness, right? I mean, there's nothing, when you look at a Chick-fil-A, I know there's things I don't see there, but then there's just the basics, right? I mean, that are so powerful at the end of the day. Do you think sometimes people try to make it just too complicated? And
probably so.
And we don't just kill it on some of these basics?
Well, here's another little anecdote that sometimes helps people. You know, I many times go to our competitors on a Sunday, and because I don't have the option to go to Chick-fil-A, but many times I get a poor experience.
Yeah.
But what I always think is, I don't blame the 16-year-old behind the counter.
Right, it's the manager.
Exactly. Yeah. Whatever they're reflecting is a reflecting of the way they're being treated. So if you're not happy with the experience, maybe the problem is not the frontline people, it's the way they're being treated. And are we role modeling for them? And what I think Chick-fil-A team members get is great role model. They get treated well, and all they do is reflect over the counter the way they're being treated behind the counter.
Great.
That's a real secret to the whole thing.
And it's just so, you know, and I think, you know, maybe we can wrap up today on that. You know, I feel like I'm preaching that. It's a never-ending sermon. You know, it's a never-ending story about, and for all of you out there, you know, I think it's so debilitating to think that you have to fix other people. And the day you guys just decide to fix yourself will be the day that this thing turns on a dime. You know, when a client comes in and signs up for coaching and all of a sudden starts looking at the world differently, I'm always amazed at how fast things happen for them and how things turn around. I mean, we the weakest position in our society is the position of acting like you've got to make other people do things, right?
Yes.
And I mean, I think that's what you're saying. It's like, but when we just, if it's as fathers or mothers or sisters or brothers or whatever it is, right? It's about, you just do the thing you need to do, and that thing is what's inspirational. And I think the minute we move the control outside, it becomes frustrating, right? I mean, I have so many clients, you know, I was on the road a little bit over the last couple of weeks. I made a trip to Hawaii and a couple of trips to California, and kind of out talking to people, you know, that I don't know, and sharing the message of, you know, patient first, you know, and when you tell them that your service is a reflection of you, boy, the first, they hesitate, right? So there's a denial, people. We all have this.
Yeah.
I guess that's why they call it denial, right?
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, we used to talk a lot about, we become like those we surround ourselves with, for better or worse. And that was one of the miracles at Chick-fil-A for me, is being surrounded by people like Truett Cathy and some of the other leaders. It just made me so much better because I was surrounded by them.
That's
but
awesome.
The reverse is true. If you're not happy with the people around you, and they're not happy with it, maybe, you know, somebody's not role modeling, right?
Yeah.
Because if you're role modeling the right stuff, they will eventually become like whatever you're role modeling.
Yeah. So it's crazy, right? You're making, just as we sit here and think about it, right? And just even running through that filter of myself, right? You know, I think that's what we all have to do is, you know, you can think you're doing it, but you got to keep coming back. And, you know, that idea, you know, complacency, you know, and I have a lot of clients who have done good work in this area, and then they hit a point where they say, I've done enough. So mm-hmm. So look, can we talk about when is enough? Mm. It doesn't exist, right?
Mm. Well, I mean, maybe to that point, I'll share one other thing. 5 years ago, I had to make a very tough decision to leave mm-hmm. Chick-fil-A. Yeah. You know, and I've already told you, I've got the job I didn't want to retire from. Mm-hmm. But I felt like it was time to leave, but not, my wife says I'm failing retirement because I got seven other businesses. At that time, financially, I was ready mm-hmm. to leave Chick-fil-A, but emotionally, I was not. Mm-hmm. So I went to Dan Cathy because Truett was no longer with us at that. And I said, Dan, I said, financially, I'm ready to leave Chick-fil-A, but emotionally, I'm not. I said, would you entertain something? Mm-hmm. I said, up to that point, when people would retire from Chick-fil-A, they would become retirees, and it was like, have a nice life. Mm. I said, what about if we thought about it like a university? Mm. What about if we created alumni? Mm. And what do universities do with alumni? That's they try and keep them connected to that institution for the rest of their lives. That's I said, what about if we formed a Chick-fil-A alumni society? Mm. And you better be careful what you ask for, because his response was, hey, that sounds great. Will you do it? So I said, yeah, I'll do it. So now we have this very robust Chick-fil-A Alumni Association. But the reason I bring it up is this. Think about, whoever is listening to this, your business. When people are no longer receiving a paycheck from you, would they be interested in still being part of your business? Yeah. I'm going to be down at Chick-fil-A Friday of this week helping out. I go back and talk to employees. I'm not receiving a paycheck because it was never about the paycheck. Yeah. It was always about the mission we were on. And 5 years later, I'm still emotionally connected to that organization that I want to help them be successful without a paycheck.
I love that.
And I think that's a really great thing to think about for any business. Are you running your business in a way that when people are no longer collecting a paycheck from you, they still want to help you be successful?
I love that. That's awesome. Well, we're super excited to have you. Thanks for taking time today, as always. And so if you guys are listening, give my office a call. We've got some scholarships to come to that Nashville event. If you've never been to one of our events, we like to think of them as sort of what we're talking about. They're not what you're used to coming to. Just from an experience and the folks that are there, these are not your normal run of the mill. I don't know if you remember the enthusiasm.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
From the last group, right?
there was energy and passion and excitement. It was amazing.
And those were the team members of clients. I think one of the things you guys, when you come to one of these events and you see what a really on fire team looks like, and I think it can be shocking to people's system when they first see it. They're like, what is with these people? But that's what you're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. When you talk about a culture and all that kind of stuff. So I think we judge that sometimes incorrectly, right? We judge enthusiasm you talk about it, and certainly Chick-fil-A is certainly a company that has had its pair of inappropriate judgment, if I've ever seen a company that has, right? So doing things well requires withstanding a little bit of judgment, and but that's a small price to pay. So thank you so much. Appreciate everybody joining us, and we will see you in Nashville.
Thanks so much for checking out this episode of the Private Practice Playbook. For clips of this episode, go ahead and check out the YouTube channel. If you enjoyed what you heard today, make sure to subscribe to the podcast at podcastfordoctors.com to unlock subscriber-only bonus episodes. Find our links below in the description.